Hi, and welcome to The Parent Equation with me, Aisha Murray, the podcast series where working parents share their unique stories of raising a family alongside their career. From complete career changes to parental rights, from IVF to single parenting, each episode is inspiring, and I'm so grateful to all my guests for being so candid. Parenting isn't easy, but we're all in it together. So today on The Parent Equation, I'm joined by Eva Lansocht. Eva is a professor of civil engineering, a blogger and a podcaster, and she's joining us very early in the morning from Ecuador. So thank you, Eva, for being on so early.
Thank you so much for having me, Aisha.
So the first question is, and I think I know part of the answer, but for people listening, is how come you're in Ecuador?
My husband is from Ecuador, so I met him when I was a graduate student, and after some wandering around the world, we settled down here in Ecuador.
Okay, I think you were in the Netherlands as well for some time, weren't you? Okay,
that's correct.
But Ecuador is your permanent home.
Yes, I still work part-time in the Netherlands, and then combined with my position here in Ecuador, so I do travel back to the Netherlands fairly often.
Yeah. And what is your family set up over in Ecuador?
I have my husband, I have a four-year-old daughter, and we also have a senior cat.
A senior cat. So let's start, Eva. I think we've spoken before about this. So something you're very passionate about, being a working parent and wanting to share with other working parents, is how important our values are with the choices that we make in life and in career and in life, I guess. Maybe let's just start there, and maybe you can just talk, give me a bit of background as to why, where that came from and why it's so important to you.
Mm-hmm. Yes. First of all, my exploration on how to make better decisions came as I became a mother. And of course, I have quite a workload at work, being with my position here in Ecuador, as well as part-time in the Netherlands, and adding my daughter to that, and still wanting to have time for myself and my husband and everything. I decided to have a good look at how to make better decisions. And what I found for myself is that by going to the basics and looking at my core values in life, by doing the values exercise, which I can talk about so the values exercise is essentially used, and you can find it just by Googling it. There's a number of people that have a certain iteration of it on their website. But you start from a large sheet of all possible values that are just adjectives in a sheet of paper. And from there, you start selecting the ones that call out to you. Yeah. And once you've selected the ones from that list, you can organize them into categories, because some of them will be rather connected. For example, for me, I had, and it's been a while since I did it, but I think I had empathy, compassion, kindness, things like that together. So I knew these are related to what I then put under the umbrella of compassion. Yeah. And other things that I had were creativity, exploration, things like that, that really called to my creative side. So I knew I could lump them under creativity. And so lumping those, the idea is that you end up with 4 to 5 key values or core values. And then if you want to make it a little more appealing, you can write a short sentence around each of these values. And I have mine here on a sticky note on my on the bottom of my computer screen, for example, just as a reminder when I'm at work and at home as well, to make better decisions.
So then, do you making those decisions, so if something happens now, you're at work and a decision has to be made, do you consciously, I suppose, look at your sticky note, the values, and take a conscious time to think it through? Or does it just, because you've been doing it for a while, does it just come naturally to you? Because to me, I haven't done the values exercise before, particularly in depth. So it would have to be quite a conscious way for me to do that.
Mm-hmm. I do pause. I don't necessarily look at the sticky note, because I don't always have the sticky note. I'm not always behind my computer. But I do pause when I make a decision. I first try to think, is this something I really want to do? And then, is it in line with my values? And do I have the time for it? Can I commit to it? And then I will give an answer. And I think that also helps set better expectations of what I can do, both at work and within the family.
Mm. But I suppose alongside that, you have to have confidence to say no to certain things, or to turn down particular opportunities, or to, especially when it's someone else requesting that from you. So yes. how do you build that up alongside understanding your values?
That's, of course, a difficult one. And so I'm not going to say that I have it nailed down to hard science, because I still, of course, fall in the trap of wanting to help out others, especially when it's, and I think it has helped to figure out who I can help, especially with something that is urgent, that would require a time commitment, and how it would impact them. So, for example, when it's anything that comes from my students, whether that's my undergraduate students or my doctoral students, I do consider that a priority, because it is, they are still building their career, they're studying. Partially, it's also my responsibility to them as their professor. So that always has priority. Mm-hmm. When it's, for example, volunteering efforts, demands on going to give presentations, things like that, that's where I really need to see if I can commit the time to it, and especially if it involves travel.
Yeah. And how have your values changed since becoming a mom?
I think before becoming a mom, I was very focused on my career and not much else. And that, of course, changed when my daughter was born. And even before she was born, I thought, well, I will keep working part-time in the Netherlands and she will just stay with my husband for that time. And it will be fine, because it's just a short period of time. And I did that in the first year, and I was rather miserable. And then after that, I started to look for ways to take her along with me. And so that as well, the expectations that I had about motherhood before becoming a mom were not correct.
They're not usually, are they? They're not usually. And then how do you apply? Cause I think what we talk about a lot with when I'm coaching and talking to parents like you, is that it's one thing establishing your values as an individual, and then it's another thing looking at your family values, because then you've got two, three, four, five, six people, whatever it is in a family, all with individual values, individual perspectives on life. So in your family setup, how do you make sure that your values align, I suppose, with the rest of the values in the family?
I must say that my daughter is still, she's just a 40-year-old, so it's a bit early to figure out what her life values are, even though yesterday she had some very deep questions about life and death for me to answer. That kind of stopped me in my tracks. Yeah. When it comes with to my husband, which is pretty much the other very important element in the family, we talk about mostly how to plan our future, what we want to achieve together. At this moment, it's mostly building our house, getting a better place to live and things like that, as well as how we can spend time together by taking conscious time off to travel, to visit family, things like that.
So it's about communication, isn't it, I suppose?
Yes.
So again, one of those, I mean, communication could be one of your values, couldn't it? Good communication.
Yes, one of my values is to value relationships. So then, is there as a reminder that I need to find the time to spend with other people, with my family, and as well as friends, which sometimes falls a little bit to the background when you become a parent. And also to be considerate of what they want to achieve and how to work it out together.
Yeah. And relationships, I think, is quite an interesting one, because often, especially as working parents, we have so many priorities, obviously children-related priorities that have to happen, that we end up putting ourselves last on the list of things to concentrate on. So we end up forgetting really who we are and who we were before we had kids and all these sort of things. So it seems like the fact you've done the values work in the first place is probably a huge step that lots of parents, I certainly know, haven't done. So they probably haven't even got their foundations really set strongly. But once you've done that values work, how can you really make sure that you don't, that you do find time for yourself? And I don't just mean physical time, but mental time as well, and put yourself not first, but put yourself equally within the family. How do you manage that?
Yeah, it's a great question. And of course, a very difficult one as well. I think for me, it comes down to having identified what really lifts me up and to make that a priority. So for me, it is writing and creative writing and putting aside the time, for example, in the evening or on the weekends to spend time on that. I play music, but now with the pandemic, I haven't been playing with other people, and I do miss, that's also my creative side and the relationship to be able to play music with others. So usually if we have a concert coming up, we will get together and practice, and unfortunately that hasn't been possible in this time, and I do feel that that's something that I'm really missing, and just, you know, practicing skills on my own is just not the same. By far.
What instrument do you play?
I play the cello and I sing.
Okay, lovely. I won't ask you to do that right now, a bit early in the morning. And then again, a reason that, so people will say, I need to find time for myself. I will carve out time during the week. I will carve out time at the weekend to pursue whatever it is. And then inevitably something happens and they don't do it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, how can we get into that? It is a routine and commitment that we are going to spend time on ourselves.
The way I do it is by having several levels of time for myself. So for example, I try to do one thing, one fun little thing during my lunch break, and one thing in the evening after my daughter goes to bed, and then maybe something that takes more time on the weekend. And then something that may take a few days of time that involves traveling once or twice a year. So I have these different levels of time that need to be invested for different things to do. And the fact that I have, that I try to think through what's one fun thing that I can do for myself during my lunch break, whether that's yesterday I went to buy a slice of cake, and the day before I think I watched a part of an online course, just very small things that are very easy to implement. But the fact that it's, that I have that opportunity on a daily basis means that if something happens, maybe it's not going to happen every day, but it may be that I get to do it 3 days out of five in the work week, or 4 days out of five, or in the ideal world, 5 days out of five.
And it only has to be even a few minutes, isn't it? Even just 5-10 minutes of time. It doesn't need to be. I think that's what we all maybe struggle with a bit, is assuming that it has to be this hour-long exercise or hour-long activity. And then, of course, you don't do it because that time is very hard to come by. But just committing to a small, if even just 5 minutes to start with, just to get you on, sort of get on the path, I suppose, will be better than nothing.
And I think along the same lines, just committing to stepping away from the busyness at times. For me, when we were in lockdown, one of the things that I did was just to brew a cup of tea and go to the roof of my building where I can see the mountains and get a little bit of sun and just hang out there until my cup of tea is over. And that's, I would be having my tea break anywhere or my coffee break anyway. But taking that step to just go outside and give myself permission to just let my mind wander and enjoy my tea and see some of the mountains and the sun, then makes it such a richer experience. And I think that it's so much more uplifting than just, you know, trying to down the tea and burn your mouth along the way.
It reminds me of a little story, slightly off topic. When I used to live in Italy, I did an Italian degree a very long time ago, it feels like 1995 or something. And I lived in Pisa for a year, and it was the first time I'd lived in Italy. And I went to the local coffee shop at the end of the road, and all of these chaps on the way to work would pop in the coffee shop, have an espresso, 2 minutes and out the door onto work. So I thought, right, I need to be part of this culture now. I need to go and order myself an espresso. So I walked in, I ordered my espresso, and I thought perfect Italian, and I drank it, and it was so hot that I completely burnt the roof of my mouth. And I had to just style it out. I had to just leave, kind of pretending nothing had happened. But that was a massive error in judging the heat of an espresso. They've obviously got slightly more tolerance to the heat. But yeah, that reminds me of that, drinking hot drinks. But I think your point about just getting outside, it's so easy, especially with the work and life being combined at home for so long, especially still in the UK, people are still working from home. And it's so easy to have that cup of tea or coffee in front of your laptop, or have your lunch in front of your laptop, and everything is a screen. And even just that 5 minutes, as you say, just to go outside and have your cup of tea and actually breathe in some fresh air, makes a massive difference to mental health, doesn't it?
Yes, because the to-do list will still be there. And I some time ago I was talking with one of my colleagues about giving ourselves as well permission to take a holiday, and I told him, you know what, if I have to take a holiday when my to-do list is finished, I have to wait until I retire. So yeah. I'm just taking it.
Yeah, definitely. And then how do you think, so being an educator, being a professor, do you feel that helps you bring up your child, because you have a way of already communicating with young people, and you have a way of you are an educator, so passing that on to your child should be potentially easier.
It's actually the opposite. I think my daughter is teaching me how to be a better educator.
Okay.
Because I see her exploring the world and learning things for the first time, whether that is first steps or now that she has learned the concept of life and death and the questions that she has about that. And it helps me to think back on how I was when I was a student learning these new concepts. And I think as professors, we are so ingrained in our work, and it has become second nature to talk about these concepts, but we still have to teach them to people who have never been faced with them before. Yeah. And seeing my daughter learning very basic skills in life has actually helped me to take a step back and say,
And I suppose also seeing the enjoyment, because my youngest is six, so similar, she's still very much in that exploratory phase of life and lots of really interesting questions. And I think watching the enjoyment they get from learning and watching the excitement, which for me, things which seem quite simple, but for her are just, you know, unbelievable and amazing. I suppose for you, passing that on to your students, who are all going to be at that point where they're learning something new, they're excited. But for you, it's not brand new because you've been teaching it for years. So I suppose it's how you keep that passion alive for them, isn't it?
Yes. And something similar that I've seen, that my daughter, for example, when she's learning polars or any very basic concept, I see that she learns it in very different ways, through songs, through coloring, through rhymes, anything.
Yeah.
That covers the topic, but in a very different way that it's provided to her. Mm-hmm. And that also has inspired me to try and see if my students are learning a new concept, whether I can show it to them with a drawing as well, explain it. I don't have nursery rhymes for teaching
try.
Them.
I wouldn't call them nursery rhymes, but you could have some kind of poetry. Mm-hmm.
I also try to show it by really taking something and showing them, look, this is how it behaves. I teach structural engineering and the design of concrete structures. So I show, this is, you know, if you push on a column, this is what it does. If you take a piece of paper, you can think it's a building slab, and this is how it behaves. Mm-hmm. So I try to go back to the really basic ways of explaining it.
Yeah.
Different ways by catering to a buffet of options for them to learn from.
Mm. And slightly different question now, slightly different sort of topic, but I'm always fascinated because I'm very much London born and bred. I've lived abroad for bits here and there, but London centric. My kids are brought up in London. My husband's English. So it's a very sort of, it's a London UK based life. So I'm always fascinated when I talk to people like you who have a very, not transient life, but you've traveled around, you've lived in different countries, you're bringing up your children with multilingual families. So how is it for you? Because obviously I suppose your daughter potentially is trilingual, I guess, is she? Mm-hmm. Or be trilingual. So what's that like, I suppose, being a parent of sort of multicultural children and showing the world as you've done?
That's a great question. And I have to think about it a little bit because for us, it's just our daily reality. So thinking what it would have been like if we would have, for example, been living in the Netherlands, I think what it's like for her to be faced with so many different cultures is that I think she gets a chance to, of course, learn multiple languages from a very young age, as well as to learn that not everything is set in stone, that some things are, this is how I do things as a Belgian, and this is how the Ecuadorian family does things. And sometimes that's a bit different. And I tell her that, you know what, in Belgium, it's more common to do this and this and this. Well, in Ecuador, it's more common to this and this and this. And you can try out both and see what works best for us as a family and for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And presumably as she grows older, she'll travel further. So if you're going back and forth to Europe, she'll grow up, sort of her formative years, I guess, will be formed by these different cultures coming at her.
Mm-hmm.
And how would you like her to, what can you see her doing with that, I wonder? Because I talk about role modelling a lot with people I talk to and how kids look up to us and what we've done with our lives and things. What do you think will happen for her being multicultural?
I think the one thing that I hope that she'll be able to do is to put herself in the shoes of others very easily, that she understands that somebody's background can be different and that can explain why they think a certain way, why they make certain decisions, and that will give her more compassion towards others, hopefully.
Yeah. When you were homeschooling her, which presumably would have been in Ecuador, as a professor yourself, did you find it easy to educate her at home, to homeschool her? Or was it actually sort of a bit of a, what we call a busman's holiday? So because you do it all day anyway, it was just maybe a bit too much.
Yeah, I think it was just more a longer holiday. And I must say that she entered school about a year ago. So they were virtually teaching, which for, of course, preschool is an interesting setup.
Yeah.
And what they were doing is they were connecting through Microsoft Teams twice a day for 30 minutes. But they gave us a bit of structure of this is the exercise that we'll be doing in the break time, for example. So I did have that help there. And after a while, I also got extra help from my mother-in-law, who lives very nearby, who is taking my daughter now during the days. Okay. Because the schools are still, they're supposed to start slowly reopening in September.
Oh, right. Okay. So they still haven't opened. So how long has she been at home then? Quite a long time.
Yes. She started school when she was three, but that was already during the pandemic. So she has gone to school 2 days.
In almost what year? Almost 2 years, or a year and a half.
Yes. Yeah. She went last year with Easter, they did something of looking for chocolate eggs in the school that she went to. And then the last day of class, she got to go say goodbye to her teacher see her new classroom.
Because I just had a podcast guest on before, who's called Stephanie Ryan. And she's also an educator. She's a scientist in the States. And she said she found at the beginning of homeschooling, because she was also an educator, that she had to again change the way she was teaching her child, because it wasn't the classroom. It wasn't, you couldn't just sort of produce classroom materials and hope that everyone was going to get on with it.
Yeah.
So she then started with her science hat on, finding different activities to still teach, but in very much more engaging ways with her time, experiments and going to the garden and cooking and doing all this kind of thing. And that she ended up with a huge Instagram following because she put it all on Instagram during lockdown. So is that something you can turn to quite easily, sort of teaching in a more engaging way because you have that background?
Yes. And that's also what you're mentioning is rather similar to what I did with my daughter at the very beginning of lockdown. I actually sat down and made for myself a little table. And I said, okay, every day, if all else fails, we want to do something that is creative, something that is active, something that is learning related, and something reading a story. So I made this week table and thought of one thing that I could do, very simple and just the very basic. So whether it be drawing the rainbow and then going through the colors and center it around one concept, but then something creative, something more learning, etc.
Yeah. And actually, that's in fact exactly what she said she did. She had themes. So you'd pick a theme for the week or for the day, and then all the activities would come under that one umbrella. So it felt like it was a more sort of unified approach. So I'm in awe of both of you, because I think my homeschooling was a lot more ad hoc than that. I'm not sure there's any themes. There's quite a lot of shouting.
I admit that there has been much more Paw Patrol than I care to admit.
Yeah. That's another thing she mentioned, actually, which is really good, on the screen time. So because screen time has just increased, because it's had to, especially if you're working and you've got kids at home, she would take whatever they're watching, let them watch it, and then create an activity off the back of that. So if it was a Disney Pixar movie, Toy Story, you know, the relationship between Buzz and Woody, for example, she would then talk to her daughter about that relationship and why was he feeling unhappy, and what, you know, things about the friendship, also a smaller child, or creating a creative task, but based on the film they'd watched. So at least then you extend, I suppose, extending the film, and it's not just screen time then. It's not just empty screen time. It's actually an extended, and I think that's a fantastic idea just generally to try and use screen time in a positive way. And then I suppose with regards to your future working parenting and that kind of thing, and thinking you're going to stay in Ecuador, how do you think, just as a working mum, because I feel like just talking to you feel quite balanced, and you've got your values and you understand how your family dynamics work, and you do manage to carve out time for yourself. As your daughter gets older, how do you think you're going to keep yourself, I suppose, centered and keep your values at the front of your mind? How's that going to be sustainable for you?
I, of course, don't have a crystal ball to tell me what the future has in store for me. And I think we all learned 1.5 years ago that very unexpected events can happen. So barring that, I think as my daughter grows older, I will continue to have these conversations with her on what she likes doing and what I can find the time for to assist her with, and explain her as well that I am working, and sometimes that is something that she is sad about, but explain her as well that that's something I enjoy and that brings value to my life and to us as a family. And keep growing, keep learning from her, and see where the path takes us.
And
keep an open mind.
Always keep an open mind when it comes to kids. And then before we wrap up, you also have a blog and a podcast, don't you? So I was wondering, what's that about and what sort of started you off on your podcast journey?
Sure. So my blog and podcast are mostly about PhD studies. I started my blog 12 years ago?
Okay.
When I was a PhD candidate and I was writing about my experiences on the PhD, and then I've expanded it to generally writing about with advice for PhD candidates, as well as general topics in academia and research. And the podcast we started, and I say we because I have a co-host who is a current PhD student. So we have it as a conversation between me as a professor and Rico, my co-host, as a PhD candidate. And that we started in December of 2020. And the blog is on my website, which is evalanzov.com. And the podcast is under the name of PhD Talk, and you can find it on all the popular platforms.
That's great. And I think I love, the reason I do my podcast is just to be able to meet people like you and talk to people. I think, do you get people on your one, or is it just the two of you having a chat?
Yes, we alternate between episodes where it's the two of us talking about a topic related to the PhD, and episodes where we interview people.
Yeah, it's really good. I think it's great for communication, isn't it? And just keeping, especially in absolutely. This bizarre current climate we live in, keeping ourselves connected to the humanity out there.
Yes.
So Eva, I think we've come, about time to wrap up. So thank you so much. You've just given your website, that best place to find you on your website. Is there anywhere else that people can find you if they want to tune into?
Sure. People can also find me on Twitter at Eva Landsucht, on Instagram at Eva Landsucht, and on Facebook under the PhD Talk page.
Perfect. Plenty of places to find you. And thank you so much again for coming on so early in Ecuador. Have a lovely rest of your day, and I'll speak to you very soon. Thank you.
You too.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of The Parent Equation. And please remember to hit subscribe, and also it would be great if you could leave a review. Thanks so much, and see you next time.